kiss it goodbye.
Oh, baby, did he get that baby out of sight.
Hey, everybody, and thanks for listening to the 60 Feet 6 Inches podcast. I'm Peter.
I'm Nate.
And this is our second episode. We would like to thank you again for listening and taking your dear sweet time to listen to this. Let's just start off with the big news this week, which is Michael Vick to the Eagles, and just some general reaction we have to it.
This has to be the last place I expected Michael Vick to go. I mean, even the improbable play in the UFL for a season thing seemed way more likely to me than Michael Vick landing with the Eagles. I am honestly not sure what they plan to accomplish here, especially since they've been on the record as saying that they don't want to run the Wildcat. I don't get it, unless this is a move to push Donovan McNabb out the door. I know he's unpopular in Philadelphia, which always struck me as weird, considering he's probably one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL.
It's true, it's just something about Philly. They booed him when he was drafted, and now still he's hated, even though he's led them to a Super Bowl and countless NFC Championship games. The other thing that I find interesting in this is that Michael Vick goes to Philly instead of the countless other cities that were willing to run the Wildcat. I actually found it kind of interesting that Miami wasn't willing to pick him up at any point. And one of the few things I found really interesting was that Tony Dungy said Indianapolis was actually a perfect fit for Vic. The only problem is that he was a perfect fit in the sense that it would be a good community for him and not a perfect fit in the football sense. Meanwhile, to Philadelphia seems like maybe the complete opposite. He may get playing time because McNabb is hated so much, but at the same time you have Philly fan who is just going to absolutely tear him apart.
Yeah, and I know that Chase Utley had no comment about it, but for those of you unfamiliar with Chase Utley's animal rights activism, he's part of the SPCA, and so is his wife, and he's a big dog lover, so this was obviously a big deal for him. And obviously Utley is one of the most popular figures in Philadelphia sports. He's both a great athlete and a class act, so it's interesting that he had no comment. Probably the best thing for him to say on the subject, but I just don't see Vic fitting in Philadelphia at all.
One thing I'm really hoping for, though, is that Michael Vick does come through. He ends up making some big plays. And I really hope that it's at a home game. So that way, Michael Vick leads the Eagles to victory. Eagles are happy. Eagles fans, Philly fan is pumped. They go into the parking lot. They're completely intoxicated. And then they interact with the PETA people. And then, as soon as that game ends, within 30 minutes, I'm going to log on to YouTube and just watch the carnage, because it's going to be hilarious. I don't personally have anything against PETA or any of the people involved in that. I just think Philly fans' debauchery and love for parking lot fights is hilarious.
Like I said earlier, the move makes no sense to me, because not only do the Eagles have a good starting quarterback, they just drafted a quarterback a year or two ago in Kevin Kolb to be a backup and possibly a future starter. And really the thing that they need on their team is a star-level wide receiver. You know, they needed to go out in free agency or to make a trade to bring a superstar wide receiver to that team, because McNabb has nobody to throw to on that team. And you look at what he did the one year that he had a star receiver in Terrell Owens, and yeah, they didn't get along well and it ended horribly, but that's the year he made it over the hump and got to the Super Bowl.
Well, one thing you could speculate from this is that with as much as McNabb hasn't been liked, although from what I've heard from people in Philadelphia is that McNabb is a lot better, is received a lot better now than he was even just a couple of years ago, especially since he started to man up and started to own the fact that, yeah, I'm the quarterback of this team. No one can take that from me. One thing you could speculate is, even though McNabb may still be unliked enough that they could possibly be looking to shop him if Vic proves to be the quarterback he was before he went to prison. Or maybe they're going to shop Kolb.
I don't know. I think there are several teams that needed a quarterback. I think there may even be a few teams in the league that Vic could have ended up as the very likely starter for when he was playing again. Not only do I not understand why Philadelphia chose Vic, I don't understand why Vic chose Philadelphia.
Yeah, it's puzzling. Why would you go to some of the most hateful fans in the entire country? I know that one of the things that Vic wanted was a very passionate fan base, but I'm not sure he knows what he's getting into.
Well, I think he may know what he's getting into. I mean, he had to have played there at least a few times as a Falcon. I mean, he's been to the city, but it doesn't make sense to me. It'll never make sense unless they start running the Wildcat, which they said they're not going to do.
Yeah, but you never know. They could always renege on that and go ahead and start running the Wildcat later in the season. I know that McNabb was alluding to he was brought in to be a specialist of some sort, yet if you're just coming in to be a specialist, why would you sign a contract that has a $5 million club option on it? That's going to make you an incredibly high-paid player for a position that's only going to see a few big plays during the game.
I guess we'll see what happens throughout the season with Michael Vick, but right now it's just speculation, but I have a feeling that they have some big plans for him and that by week 6 of the regular season or maybe even in the preseason when he gets on the field, we'll see it and say, oh, that's what they were thinking.
Vic hasn't played it down. He's only been to practice a few times, and we're not really going to have an idea of what we're dealing with until he takes the field. He couldn't have lost that much of a step in prison. You don't really lose fast.
Yeah, I think he'll definitely still have his game-changing speed, but he was never much of a passer in the first place in sense of accuracy, so I wonder how much rust has affected that. You know, you take somebody who's already not the most accurate passer in the NFL, and you take him out of the game for a while, he might end up just being a really fast backup.
Since we're on the topic of people currently suspended by the NFL, let's move to Dante Stallworth, who was recently suspended for the entire season.
It's another weird case by Roger Goodell about dishing out punishment that may be harsher than it deserves. I'm not advocating drunk driving. Not at all. That's one of the worst things I think anybody can do. But the fact is, what Stallworth did was an accident, and he feels bad for it. What Michael Vick did, he did on purpose, and he made a profit from it. Yeah, he served his time in prison, and Stallworth got kind of a slap on the wrist, but something needs to be taken into account for the fact that what Michael Vick did, he did on purpose.
One thing that is still confusing about Goodell's whole suspension system is you have an intentional dog killer who gets a year suspension, including the time before he went to jail, so pretty much missing 2 seasons. You have someone who has missed 2 seasons, and then is suspended an additional 6 games this year and continues to get punished even though the law has thrown him in jail and punished him. Then you have someone who accidentally killed a human being and he's given a slap on the wrist by the judicial system. He gets a year suspension, which Goodell has said he will be reinstated into the league immediately after the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's what gets me the most about it, is Stallworth was already suspended. Not only did he already serve his time legally, he already served his time in the NFL. Why are we all of a sudden piling on more time way after the fact, way after he's ready to move on with his life and get back to playing football?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to think about. The thing that I'm wondering, though, is why does he get a punishment like that compared to Michael Vick? So I understand Vick was intentionally killing dogs. He was doing it for profit, like you said. But let's not paint over the fact that Stallworth actually killed a human being. Yes, he was drunk. Yes, it was an accident. But I just find the punishment system to be kind of odd.
Yeah, I think Goodell's punishments are really inconsistent. he doesn't seem to have any sort of guidelines that he goes by. He just wants to seem like an enforcer, and he does, but at times he also seems like a needless enforcer, like he's just piling on for the sake of piling on.
One thing that I keep wondering about is, Goodell, I don't care if he has some sort of, you know, tough system that's going to make players behave or do whatever. He is the commissioner of the NFL. He is their chief executive. I completely understand a boss having strict rules for his employees. The problem I do have, though, is when the punishments for his employees are not fair. There is not any standard system to this. He is going willy-nilly and assigning out punishments as he feels.
That's my exact problem with it as well. I don't think there's anything wrong with enforcing discipline in the league. I think if you're going to be paid millions of dollars to play a sport, then you should live up and be a good citizen as well, and punishment should come swiftly and strongly when you don't meet the expectations of the league. But at the same time, there comes a time when you say, all right, this player's been punished. We can either let them get back to playing football or not.
One thing I wanted to get back to with the Stallworth court case. Stallworth had this crime committed in the state of Florida. It was in Miami, I believe. In the state of Florida, if you are drunk and you get in a car accident that kills someone, if you can prove that alcohol was not the reason for the accident, you do not face the same sort of punishment as you would if alcohol was found to be the reason why. He may have been drunk, but from what I understand, alcohol was not the cause of the accident, and according to an eyewitness, the man who he hit did walk out in front of his vehicle.
Alright, and I can buy it. I can buy the reason for his light punishment and what have you, but the fact is he had a punishment, and he had an NFL punishment. There's no need to punish him again. Roger Goodell's just throwing things around here. He's trying to seem tougher than he is. I think he's on a power trip.
He is on a power trip. He's doing the same thing that we've seen with a lot of commissioners in the past who make stupid decisions, do things their way, and then expect everyone to fall in line and not disagree with the way they're doing things.
Exactly, and how has that worked out for those commissioners?
One example would be the NHL. Now, Gary Bettman doesn't do the same thing that Goodell's doing with the suspension system. The NHL is pretty streamlined when it comes to that. But Bettman has allowed teams to move into markets that are untested hockey areas, and then when they try to move back to another, back up north, to stronger markets, he stops it consistently every time. It's one of those things where you don't want to admit a mistake. Eventually, Goodell is going to suspend somebody to a point where no one agrees with it, and he's going to have to decide, am I going to admit that I made a mistake, or am I going to stand my ground, which I'm going to go out on a limb and say he will, and become an incredibly unpopular commissioner for it. A lot of the commissioners currently are very unpopular. It's interesting to see how Goodell is going to change over time, if he's going to go from somebody who was generally well-received when he came in. It's hard to replace Tagliabue, though. Tagliabue was an incredibly popular commissioner, at least compared to the ones we have now. It'll be interesting to see if Goodell, with his suspension policy, ends up becoming a hero and becoming the guy that brought back tradition and honor to the game, or a guy that played by his own rules and messed up the NFL. Gonna find my baby, gonna hold her tight, gonna grab some afternoon delight. My motto's always been, when it's right, why wait until the middle of a cold, dark night? Another thing that's been in the news recently is Rick Pitino. This case has been incredibly interesting to me for multiple reasons. And the backlash that's going to come from this is absolutely astounding. For those that don't know, a woman, Karen Cypher, and said that Rick Pitino had sex with her in a restaurant in 2003, and then afterward, Rick Pitino paid her to get an abortion. This case just, it becomes more bizarre, it seems, by the day. It's heavily believed that this is for extortion purposes, that she needs to get money out of it. Pitino admitted this is all true, that he did sleep with this woman, he did pay for her to have an abortion. One of the things that makes this more interesting is that this woman is married to one of Pitino's aides, except now she's alleging that Pitino paid the aide to marry her.
Yeah, it's one of the weirdest stories I've ever seen. The thing that always gets me about extortion cases and blackmail cases and what have you is if the person just comes out and admits to what they did, which Pitino did, but if the person just comes out and tells all, then the blackmailer loses all power.
This pretty much seems to be a cut-and-dry extortion case. She's already been arraigned and charged with extortion and lying to a federal agent. I honestly don't have a lot of way to completely express how I feel about this. It's just bizarre that Rick Pitino, who, no, I don't know the guy, I don't know anything about him besides he's a basketball coach. In 2003, he was in a bar or a restaurant and was drunk with this woman. They went and had sex somewhere in the restaurant and then paid her $3,000 to have an abortion.
Yeah, it's one of the weirdest sports stories to spring up in quite some time.
For a week, I've been completely entertained by every new factoid that comes out about this. I know that sounds horrible, but this sounds almost like a soap opera at points. Rick Pitino, at his apology press conference, comes out and says all of this stuff. Then, in the middle of apologizing, he claims, well, I've gotten through 9/11 and the loss of my brother-in-law, so I think my family will be able to get through this.
He pulled the Rudy Giuliani card, a noun, a verb, and 9/11.
Yeah, but Rudy Giuliani at least did something. Rick Pitino lost his brother-in-law. I'm not slighting that. I'm just, that was in 2001, and you're bringing up this now because you think that it's going to gain sympathy with people? Oh, well, we got through 9/11, so we're going to be able to get through this. No, now you're just grabbing for straws at this point.
I like what you said about the soap opera, because I can definitely picture this as a soap opera, like, Rick walks home, and it's like, boom, 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 chin, 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 boom, 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 chin, chin, chin. He gets confronted by his wife, and she's like, I heard about your extortion case. What were you doing with that woman? And now you're paying her, and she's trying to, you're causing legal trouble. I don't know if we can handle this stress. And Rick's just like, we handled the stress of 9/11. We could get through this, too.
Aw, man, I love this story just because it has provided me with so much bizarre laughter this week. I know that I probably sound like a horrible human being, and maybe I am, but at least I got my lols. What we're saying about the soap opera, though, and your little traumatization of it, maybe we should be portraying this as The Sopranos instead. I've been listening to The Two Wives Stew all week, and one thing they keep bringing up is, perhaps Rick Pitino is a made man. One of the best things that has come out of this so far, and we're not downplaying any trauma that anyone has experienced or anything like that, or we're making light of it, but we're making light of it because it's so bizarre. I just want to make that clarification before I say this. This is an exact quote that Cypher had, according to CBS News. I'll never forget, I wanted to have the baby, but Rick said my children would all be in concrete. I lived in fear for 5 years. They would be in concrete? I think there is some validity to the Two Wives Stew's idea of Rick being a made man.
Yeah, that definitely seems like a mob-related thing to say, and I don't want to speculate here because I don't want to be in concrete, but seems pretty serious.
I don't get that. Like, to be, they're going to be put in concrete. What did he mean by that? Another thing that's really odd about all of this story, which we brought up earlier, is that the woman is alleging Rick Pitino paid his aide to marry her. Either all of this story is true, or this woman is nuts. This is one of those things where it's so unbelievable that it either has to be completely true or this woman is crazy. Which to me, if Rick Pitino paid his aide to marry her, that is some real commitment by that aide.
No kidding. He does not question the boss.
I mean, he really goes above and beyond being a personal assistant.
I think that guy deserves a raise.
And maybe a promotion.
Assistant coach, at least.
Definitely. I mean, just let Pitino run the show. You don't have to do anything. Just sit on the end of the bench. Wear a suit. You earned it. You had to marry that woman. Finally, over the weekend, came out the game that everyone who loves sports and video games has been waiting for, which is the Madden release.
Oh, joy.
Now, I'm not that much of a football fan anymore, but I assure you, I will get my fill of Madden with a bunch of my friends that are diehard football fans before this year is over.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big football fan, and I gotta be honest, I enjoy Madden, but I'm a bit sick of the hysteria that surrounds the Madden release every year. You know, as a gamer, I feel like there are much more important game releases.
Kotaku actually ran a very interesting article not too long ago about the Madden release and how it was on a Friday this year, as opposed to the usual Tuesday, which the entertainment industry uses as launch day. It brought back the Madden weekend, the Madden Fridays, the football Fridays from years past, which apparently some of the people in charge of marketing didn't even know existed in years prior. A bunch of people take off work on the Tuesday Madden comes out every year, and they just commit the whole day to sitting around and eating junk food and playing the game. Instead, you have people taking off on the Friday, having a 3-day weekend to commit to Madden.
It's a much better marketing strategy, and I honestly don't see why they ever deviated from it.
I think the reason they deviated from it is just due to the whole industry standard of we release everything on a Tuesday, it all hits the stores on Tuesdays.
Yeah, but this is football! About the game itself, I just want to say that I'm psyched because my boy Troy Polamalu is on that cover.
And I'm psyched because Troy Polamalu is going to tear his ACL this year. Madden curse, cha-chang!
And I'm psyched because I don't believe in sports curses and Troy Polamalu is going to dominate this year. This year's edition of Madden figures to be a pretty good one. It's mostly an aesthetic change, but one of the changes that I'm most excited about is the player rating changes. You know, before, an average player was rated like an 80 overall, and that always seemed weird to me. Like, 80 seems pretty good. That's a solid B in college, you know. I aim for at least an 80. But in Madden, it's average. You don't want a bunch of 80s on your team. So they widen the scale, you know, they have players going all the way down to like 50, 60 now, and only great players get all the way up to 99. I like the range of the rating system that they're using now.
I am excited about the ratings change. It's high time that that happened. I'm sure that there are going to be some people who are angry because so-and-so, who was an 85 last year, is now a 70. I don't know how much I'm going to get to play of Madden, or this year's version of Madden. maybe over the course of the year I may end up finding myself coming back to football and enjoying it more. Maybe I just needed a break. But I do know at some point I'll probably play Dynasty Mode with a few friends. And when I do, I'm going to create the most interesting and entertaining football team anyone has ever seen. I'm going to take Peyton Manning, and I'm going to trade him. That's right, I'm going to trade him. And I'm going to get Chad Ochocinco, Terrell Owens, and Michael Vick. I will sell out every game, because people will come from miles around to see that train wreck. And I'll enjoy playing with it, because I'm going to run, and then when I run out of room to run, I'm going to throw that ball 80 yards downfield, Brett Favre style. I don't care that it's 2nd and 2.
That may be your greatest sports game achievement, if you accomplish that.
It will be. And since we're on the topic of greatest sports achievements, what is your greatest sports video game conquest? It doesn't matter, it doesn't have to be Madden. What is your greatest sports video game conquest?
Honestly, I usually play sports games pretty straightforward, so I don't have any huge conquests. I would say that the biggest for me was, well, I honestly do this every year. Whenever the new NCAA football game comes out, I usually take Ball State into Dynasty Mode, and I make them sort of a powerhouse in the MAC conference after years of hard work recruiting people, and, you know, I make them into basically BCS crashers, and that's fun to me. That's, you know, it's not mind-blowing. It's not exactly trading for Chad Ochocinco, Terrell Owens, and Michael Vick, but I think it's a respectable goal to accomplish. What about you? What's your biggest sports game conquest so far? We're assuming that the great roster blow-up of 2010 hasn't happened yet.
All right, besides what is to come in future days, I would have to say mine was, I was playing a friend in NCAA college football. It was either 04, 05, or 06. I think it was 05. He was Purdue, I was Notre Dame. We were playing 5-minute quarters, and at halftime, he was beating me by a score of 63-14. I somehow, through a series of onside kicks, Hail Mary passes, and full field kickoffs when he was in onside kick formation, made a comeback and won the game 99-98 on a 2-point conversion with 8 seconds left. It was awesome just because as I'm playing with this guy, he's getting more and more angry every time I score a touchdown and get the ball back. And finally, we get within 2 minutes, and he's up 14, but sees what is to come, and is already throwing the controller on the ground and just breaking down. So finally, when we get to the final play, it's 97-98. Ball at the 3-yard line for a 2-point conversion. I don't even remember what play I ran. I just remember my guy catching the ball in the end zone and him standing up and screaming obscenities for about 2 minutes. Which, I don't understand why. He still had 8 seconds to try something. But I kicked off. And then he threw a Hail Mary pass, which I intercepted and the game ended. It was kind of anticlimactic after that, but the fact that I came back from such a huge deficit is probably the greatest sports video game conquest I've ever had.
Also the greatest testament to how ridiculously unrealistic sports video games are.
That's true. Any time that a game can end 99-98 after 5-minute quarters is pretty much a testament to how inaccurate some of the games are. I know this year with Madden 10, they've tried to limit that and make it so that the games were more accurate score-wise.
Yeah, we'll see. They say that every year.
That's true. I think, though, with the lower player ratings, you may, if they're using the same sort of engine and just lowering the ratings, that may end up coming true. But
maybe
it's one of those things you're gonna have to wait and see after a couple of months and a lot of people playing it. Finally, this brings us to the trivia portion of the podcast. In the last episode, our question was, in 1985, the city of Indianapolis tried to bring an MLB team to the city. What was the proposed name of the team? We got a few people responding. We actually had two people come in with the correct answer, which was the Indianapolis Arrows. This episode's trivia question is, before the NHL renamed the conferences East and West...
Destroying NHL tradition.
Yeah, I'm still very angry about that. What were the names of the conferences, and why were they named that? Again, we'll offer some sort of prize to whoever wins something small, like a postcard, or perhaps a signed picture of Nate and I, because I know everyone's really wanting that.
Who doesn't want my autograph? I'll kill somebody.
Rick Pitino style, made man.
I am not editing that out. I'll kill somebody.
Gonna put him in concrete. He'll do it.
I'm not going to edit out the part where I said I'm not editing that out either. That's all staying in. People are going to know I'm serious.
Him and Little Ricky. Little Ricky Pitino. So, answers can be submitted to 60feet6inches@gmail.com. That's SIXTYFTSIXIN @gmail.com. As always, you can check out our blog, which updates almost daily, at www.sixtyftsixin.com.
And you can also check us out on Twitter at, you guessed it, 60 feet 6 inches. Spelled the exact same way.
Because you don't want to spell it a third time.
Exactly. Honestly, we may be even more active on Twitter than we are on anything else. And we're also on Facebook, by the way, so... We're all up in your social networking. Check us out. We're everywhere. You cannot escape us. We're creating the next empire.
It's true. We're going to be the next ESPN. And by next ESPN, I mean that's never going to happen. We're probably going to fade into oblivion in about 3 years. Hopefully not.
But it's an admirable goal.
It is an admirable goal. Please edit most of that crap out.
Nope, keeping all of it. I'm gonna leave you pleading for me to edit it, too.
We'd like to thank you for listening. Hopefully this isn't your last time listening to this podcast. I'm Peter.
I'm Nate.
And kiss the baby and put it to bed. We're done here.
Seriously, you have to quit saying that. That's honestly the dumbest thing I've ever heard.